Is this thing on? Hello, hello. What is up, you guys? You are listening to Grow with Ro. I am your host, Ramana. And on this show, we have discussions that help you feel better, think better, do better, and get you from where you are to where you want to be. So let's get into it. All right, guys, what is up? Hello, welcome back. Today, I am joined by Will. Will, I met at the gym, as I do most of my friends here. And he is, you're kind of like the only guy that I know my age who has a son in his teenage years. And I know that a lot of the conversations that we've had have been around personal development. Will is like a super self-aware person who's rooted in growth and like wanting to get better at communication and relationship dynamics and yada yada. And so he kind of has been growing side by side in this relationship with his son as his son grows up. And I thought that that would be a super interesting conversation to have here today. So let's welcome William.
Hey, Ramana, appreciate you having me on your podcast. I really appreciate everything that you're doing and trying to do. And growth is important to me. And I really appreciate being on your podcast.
Okay, so let's get into it. So I asked you about the most significant turning point in your personal growth journey. And you had told me that it was having your son and your son kind of growing into adolescence and starting making decisions as a teenager. He's now how old?
He is going to be 17 this month.
Yeah. So that must have been like a super crazy ride because you're going through a lot of that same growth, you know, that I'm sure, I feel like probably when you were younger, you like, oh, yeah, I had it figured out. Like there's a lot of growing that I've done. And then you have a kid. And then now all of a sudden, a lot of this stuff is brought up for you again, or you have to kind of reevaluate or retrain yourself in a lot of different ways in order to be a good parent and set a good example for your son. So let's get into that conversation.
This has been a very unique relationship because a lot of it's one of those relationships that is constant. I've had a lot of relationships in my life that have come and go and have taught me lessons. However, this particular relationship is ongoing. So as much growth as I have seen from him, I've seen even more growth from myself.
I can imagine. So let's get into some of the specifics of this. So you had told me that it was when your son had started making some of these adult decisions. So what sorts of decisions were being made that kind of come to mind where you started to have to reevaluate your parenting or maybe like, crap, I now have to learn some new things in terms of communication or just dealing with other people?
Well, I don't think I'm any different than anybody else. And sex and drugs are usually it was the first thing in my situation that happened. And it is still an ongoing concern / worry that I realize is a part of life. At the same time, I also realize it can change life drastically if done incorrectly or done as an adolescent.
What on earth does that mean? You're like, sex and drugs if done incorrectly. Okay. So you had a son and you knew that at one point there'd have to be a conversation about sex. Did you ever think that there'd have to be a conversation about substances? Did you think that that would just be a natural part of just having a son?
I absolutely knew the conversation was going to happen. However, I don't know as a parent if you're truly ready for it when it does happen. That's probably the hardest part, is almost being sideswiped every time a situation happens just because it's the first time I've ever done it in my life or experienced it in my life.
Yeah. And obviously you have your own experiences that you're like, okay, cool. Like now I can look back and speak on this, but there is a whole new element to how do I explain this to somebody who has their own image of even you, right? Like they look to you as an authority. Maybe they get to an age where they want to rebel, or they think that they know better, or they're all grown up, or even probably like dealing with substances. Was there an aspect where maybe you were like, crap, like, did I do something wrong? Or is this just a natural part of growing up, toying around with certain things, you know, and pushing the boundaries? How did you prepare? Was there anything that you did prior to the conversation coming up that you're like, okay, when my son gets to this age, like this is how I'm going to approach it. This is how I'm going to talk about it. Or did it, like you said, kind of blindside you and then you dealt with it maybe the wrong way initially? Like, how did that go?
I think in my situation, it being not only my first child and my only child, I handled everything reactively versus proactively. And unfortunately, in those situations, you're never prepared. But I think that that's what spurred the growth in myself due to those circumstances more so than anything else.
Let's go into that a little bit. What did it look like to be reactive?
So I think at the end of the day, when I say reactive, you know, I handled it as best as I could under the circumstances, but I think my internal fear was heightened because I have never experienced this specifically before. So having a conversation with him about the negatives of having sex, you know, as a teenager, and what comes with that, the responsibilities that he is not ready for, was, and on top of that, I also kind of viewed it as the responsibilities that I wasn't ready for, the responsibilities of having this teenager now have slight control over your life, because the decisions that he makes ultimately is going to affect you directly. And it was one of those situations that scared me at the time more than it scared him. And I reacted accordingly.
When you say it scared you, was it a little bit more about what his future would look like and how you would have to help keep him in line for his future? Or was it how what your future would look like now having to help not only him grow, but now be there for his kid?
I think the initial fear and reaction was my life. It was a selfish feeling, as in, this child is now making decisions that ultimately could change the path and the trajectory of my life. And I've always been very much in charge of my path and the decisions that I make. And with that being said, I also take responsibility for those decisions, good or bad. And I now have a child who ultimately doesn't think the way I do, thinks more emotionally, and is not thinking long-term like I am. And now he's in charge of a big portion of my life moving forward now.
So then that was probably even the scariest thing about having a kid of your own in general, yeah? If you've had this whole life that you have been kind of structured and regimented and disciplined and in full control of where you're going to go and how it's going to be, and you know what, you know, I got to do ABC to get to this cause to this effect, right? Now having a kid, even those first, what, 10 years? I don't even know the science, but you are still in control there. You know, they rely on you for everything. And you do get to say yes. You do get to say no. You have, you get to make the last call. And so then I imagine it was probably really difficult for you watching him get, even sex and drugs aside, like get to an age where now he's bucking back. Now he's pushing back. Now he's saying, I don't want to do what you're telling me to do. So what was that like? Do you remember like the first time that was like the most impactful first time when he looked at you and said, I'm not doing things your way. Here's how I want to do it. And you like felt it like in your heart.
I think that my son has always been very regimented. He knows me very well. So he knows how to respond to me. To bring out either to get what he wants or to not get what he wants. So I would say that by the time he started telling me that he wasn't going to do something or wasn't going to follow the rules, I had already changed how I handled things. When I started to really, really change who I was as a parent, rather than controlling the situation, I decided, not because I wanted to, but because I had to lead him versus tell him. And by the time he started truly telling me I wasn't going to do this, I was already years into that. So I knew how to handle it. And I knew that, you know, there's consequences to actions. And I also knew that me telling him wasn't going to work. So I didn't. I offered him options and he chose the options, and then he had to deal with the consequences. I think initially when my mindset started changing, he was at a younger age. It wasn't necessarily him pushing back on me. It was him doing things that I don't think he truly sat down and understood the repercussions of. So when we actually had that father-son conversation and I broke it down to him, I think it sparked more of a wow, I didn't see that, or wow, I didn't think of it like that, versus I'm just going to do this no matter what you say.
Let's go a little bit more into the lead versus tell concept, because I think this is something that's applicable through all of life. It's applicable in relationships. It's applicable at the gym, like all the time, right? To inspire instead of like tell someone what to do, which can be super tricky to do, because in your mind, I think the way we think is like, well, I've lived it and I've tried all of the ways and here's the one that I found. And so I'm saving you some time by just telling you what the right answer is instead of letting you flail around for 6 months figuring it out and, you know, and making some mistakes and going through some pain. So do you have an example for leadership? Like, how does one lead instead of tell someone what to do? Maybe you can give the example with the car that we talked about. Because I think that that's like a really good one, unless something else comes to mind.
Yeah, flailing around is like the definition of my life. So I definitely understand that concept. And I think you're absolutely right. Like, we have been through things in our life. And when you see another person going through that exact thing, the easiest thing for you to say to them is, I did this, this, and this, and it worked. You should do this, this, and this, and it will work. But I've also learned, even before my son, the concept of, you could think that a person is capable of so much more, but if they don't want it or if they're not interested in that, it doesn't matter. I learned that probably when I was in my early 20s, and I learned that from my aunt, who is a CEO of a hospital. And she made that very clear early on. So I started to always remember that, just because I feel like a person is capable of doing this and doing so much more or being able to do this, if they're not on the same page and if they don't think they're capable or if they don't want it, it's never going to happen. And once you realize that, you can lead, but you can't always lead them down your exact path. And with my son, him and I have always been actively together. So he's been able to see the progression and he's been right there with me. But in the latter years, the progression of whether it's in the gym, whether it's business, work, I've always included him in the conversation. He's always been around me up until he was ultimately, you know, 13, 14. He was just around me all the time. Like, I always had him at the gym with the friends, hanging out here, working on the fence, in the yard, working on cars, working on this. He's just always been around. So he's seen the progression, not only in myself, but it's also been kind of a lead by example. And in the latter years, him as a teenager is when I started to truly develop the sense of, I guess, like the positive things in my life, whether it's, you know, setting boundaries, healthy relationships, healthy lifestyle. These are all things that I find very important and I would love for him to embrace. But I've learned that telling him how to do it isn't as important as me just showing him how to do it and showing him without actually showing him, just by doing it and leading by example.
Yeah, no, I mean, you kind of answered it there because I asked an example of what it looks like to lead someone to an outcome versus to instruct them to an outcome. I'm just thinking when you told the story when we were driving to Dunedin and you mentioned that you took his car away in order to teach integrity, right? And I just found that so fascinating. My mind went to, well, we'll get into this story for a second because I want the listeners to hear that story. But my mind, my thought the entire time you were telling me that story was like, where did he come up with this? Like, how was he able to step back and know that this choice and this choice and this choice or this phrasing and or these actions will help lead to the desire you want in him that's ultimately for his best interest, but that also is something that he wants. But he doesn't necessarily know that that's what's like the psychology behind what's happening. And I just think that I just found that really fascinating because those aren't things that they teach you in books, right? You have to actively like look at a person and know a person and know, hey, I'm teaching integrity. And there's so many ways to go about parenting, right? There's just like you're just like the authority and you just punish them and you're like, you're going to do it because I said so, right? Or there is the teaching and the explaining. And I think it speaks volumes to even be able to have a son who can take kind of the bait you're giving him that is at the end of the day like a greater learned lesson and is a choice that he's making that's still teaching him like a lot of character, right? So yeah, I want to go into the story of what's going on with Keith at the moment and what you're doing about it in the most respectable way possible. Before we got into this, Will and I sat down and we're like, okay, well, we want him to listen to this and maybe he won't understand it now, but in 20 years, we'll listen back and he'll be like, thanks, Dad. So shout out, Keith. Hello.
It's you talking about that actually brought up something in my mind as a childhood, and it is 100% who I am today is because of my parents. And my parents were very much entrepreneurs. My parents were very much always communicated to me. Now, keep in mind, at the time, I never saw this until now. I'm an adult, and I look back at it, and I'm like, wow. So, like, this is why I am who I am. Funny story, I can remember a time when I was in high school, and I started playing basketball. And I went to my dad, and I was like, you know, Dad, I want to get a really nice pair of basketball shoes. And I specifically remember him writing up a contract that said I basically could only get these expensive basketball shoes if I promised to finish the year out on the basketball team. And if I quit early, I would have to give the shoes back per the contract, and I had to sign it. That's kind of how I was raised. Not in an extreme way. At the time, of course, as a child, you're like, this is ridiculous. Nobody else has to do this, right? But what it really taught me was not only integrity, but at the end of the day, like when we become adults, you either follow the rules or you don't. And there's consequences if you don't. And it taught me that there's consequences to every single action. Back to what you asked me about the car situation, which, by the way, as a parent, was probably the most stressful time of my life, because there's one thing for my son to make decisions in life that he's not prepared for, but now he's in a physical piece of metal that he can not only harm himself in, but he can harm other people in. And so it's a whole just next step and a next level of dynamic. But back to what you're asking me, I try to replicate the idea of driving a car is a privilege, and it's not something that everybody does. And I've had many friends throughout my life. I've been through in different parts of the country, and there's certain parts of the country, especially like in major cities, bigger cities, where driving a car is actually not a common thing, and it's In my world, driving a car is a very common thing. And in my son's world, it's a very common thing. And so he's under the understanding of entitlement as far as driving. And there's a part of it that I really appreciate. I love that he's not afraid to drive, and I love that he thinks it's something that he has to have. Therefore, he will always strive to have that. However, nothing is given to you, and if he were to get a car in a traditional way, whether that be through a bank or through somebody else, if he doesn't follow the criteria, they will take that car from him. And ultimately, I want to replicate that, and I want to put him in a position where we can train on not only integrity, but also just being on time, paying things on time, making payments on time, because ultimately, this is what we as adults struggle through and have struggled through and will always struggle through. And I always like to be able to train him and teach him on things while I still have a little bit of control, not to where I can control him, but to where I can catch him if he falls. Because I know that he is ultimately going to fall on his own, but if he's fallen before, it will be more familiar to him, and I think he'll be able to figure out how to actually navigate through the situation better.
So how'd you handle the car situation? What happened?
So basically, for months I had kind of, and I will say this, like I've always been a best friend to my son. It's always been a friend. He's my best friend. He's my best buddy. And over the last 4 or 5 years, I've truly had to transition back into being a parent and back into realizing that punishments and boundaries and rules ultimately are better for him going forward. It's not necessarily ideal for me because I don't like to play the dad card. I don't like to be in a position where, you know, I prefer if I could just control myself. I don't want to have to control other people. It's exhausting. And it's something that I've just throughout the years would prefer to control myself and my bubble, and hopefully the other bubbles align with me. That's not always the case. And with this particular situation, I had to start engaging and start setting a criteria and start setting groundwork and rules on, first and foremost, I have decided from the beginning, and again, this goes back to my parents, I wanted to charge my son for the car so he had, in essence, some skin in the game. Also, he had to pay for car insurance. Again, more so just because driving is a privilege. It's not a necessity. It's actually, and in his eyes, I wanted to kind of show him and teach him that this is a tool to get you back and forth to work so you can actually continue to drive. It's not just a play thing. It's not just a fun thing. And he didn't stick to the format, to the payment plan, in essence, as well as the stipulations. And the biggest thing and the biggest continuous issue that I've had with him is marijuana usage and or being surrounded by marijuana or being surrounded by it and him being able to make the right decision based on that.
Okay, so do you feel that it was a result of pot that led then, like that started the cycle of him not following through on your guys's agreement toward the car? And so then you sort of saw how that could continue spiraling and you decided to stop it in its tracks, right? So then what did you do?
So this is definitely something that I've always noticed with my son, and I think it's pretty obvious. I think that marijuana usage enables a sense of slowness, a sense of laziness, a sense of, I think it's noticeable. I, as a teenager, you know, up until I was probably early 30s, not only smoked marijuana, but did it enough to know that it did not help me progress and push forward and be motivated. And I've always noticed this sense of slowdown. I've always noticed this sense of excitement, and then all of a sudden it just simmers out. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that he's a teenager. Like, that's the normal teenager thing to do. But I also think that substance abuse, you know, whether it's food, marijuana, or lack of anything, I think is not a good time for a teenager because it's too easy for them to simmer out sober, let alone being intoxicated. This was definitely the reason for multiple reasons. Obviously, I don't want him intoxicated at that age, period, no matter what. That's against the rules. And I'll do anything to offer him incentives to not do that. And then I'll do anything and I'll take those incentives away if he's not going to follow that simple rule. But then we're also adding in the dynamic of him driving intoxicated, him getting pulled over while not only being intoxicated, but potentially, even if he's not intoxicated, having substance on him. And in today's times, it's actually been a question, like, what is illegal? What's legal? When I was a teenager and when I was younger, it was pretty cut and dry. Like, if you got pulled over with marijuana, your car is being taken away from you and you're going to get arrested and or you're going to have to pay a fine. And in today's times where marijuana is normalized, I honestly don't even know what the law is anymore. And at the same time, it doesn't really matter to me personally, but it is a struggle for this younger generation that sees marijuana being normalized and people making excuses about marijuana, like, you know, it works for this or it works for that. Yeah, okay. But a lot of people say that marijuana is for this, but yet they're sitting there getting intoxicated with their buddies while smoking marijuana. So it's kind of a unique situation and with the youth as far as marijuana usage and the normalization of it.
Did you smoke when you were his age?
I actually did not smoke when I was his age, and which is very interesting because I absolutely grew up in the environment that I should have. But I had an uncle who was extreme with being an athlete and extreme with telling me that that would ruin my athletic ability. And I just remember being his age and just realizing that that was the thing that would ruin any athletic ability. And it was such a big deal at that age for me to be an athlete and to be athletic and to work out and to play sports and to do martial arts that it actually scared me. And that's why I find it interesting is the concept today is it's actually not a bad thing or it's not a good thing. And it's just, it's a very unique time when it comes to the miseducation of marijuana. Because ultimately, in my eyes, smoking in general is not good for athletic ability. So to answer your question, my long-winded answer, I did not smoke at his age. I was actually very scared of it. I remember being 18 or 19 and having buddies over. And at this point, I actually lived in my own house at this point. And I remember them coming over, and the first time I ever did it, they were shocked because I had always turned them down. It was always a thing. And then finally I did it. And that was probably the beginning stages of me and I guess my relationship with marijuana.
It's so interesting because this, and I want to get into this conversation a little bit and see where your head's at with pot. Because I have gone back and forth my whole life. I do a lot of reading on, like, currently I'm reading a book. It's called Alcohol is Shit. Okay. Not because I'm an alcoholic, but because I really like, being introduced to new perspectives. Like, I don't want to be the person who just orders a drink at dinner because that's what you do at dinner, right? I want to like make a conscious choice. And there's days I want to have a nice cocktail and there's days where all they have is a White Claw and I don't need to have a White Claw. They taste like crap. I'm not going to have a crappy drink just for the sake of having a buzz. You know what I mean? Like that's never going to be me, but I want to continue challenging my thoughts and perspectives on alcohol, on other substances, just because they're so normalized in the world today. I want to do something to like counteract the normalization, you know, so that, like I said, I have an active choice with it. And so anyway, tangent, but with the weed situation, Ryan and I have had this conversation for like 5 years, our whole relationship, because he is like a very regular pot smoker. And for me, I have always entered the relationship a little bit more with your thought process of like associating it with laziness or like lack of ambition or just like slow or just why do you need to change your state of consciousness, right? Like that sort of thing. And he and I, it used to make him really upset, but now he understands that I'm just coming from, I'm not like always trying to like put him down and challenge it with like anger, but I'm really trying to understand because you know, in relationships, you're not always going to like every single quality that this person has. And it doesn't necessarily mean you tell them to change. It just means ask more questions so that you can at least put on, like, try on their shoes for a second so that you can see the world through their lens in order to be able to stand it, I guess. Stand that one thing that maybe you just don't, that you're like, if I could change anything, it would be this. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, with the weed, it's been really challenging for me because his biggest opposing point to what I say is, like, he has built a lot for himself. He is an extremely ambitious, driven person with work and with responsibility. He's had a lot of adversity, and he could be in a way deeper hole than he's in. And he's done all that. He's built this life. We have this life together while he smokes every day. And so to me, it's like a little bit of, like, cognitive dissonance. It's such a gray area in this world today. And so, and even, I don't know, with you, I mean, you said that you noticed a laziness or whatever. Like, I smoke maybe twice a week. And for me, I do, like, sit and I actively journal, and I do have, like, problem solving thoughts or different perspectives on things that I wouldn't normally have. And it just feels like free flowing, like, creative energy. But at the end of the day, like, if someone said to me, hey, like, if Ryan was like, let's stop smoking weed, I'd be like, okay, I really don't care. You know, to me, the issue comes when I'm like, if you don't go a day without it, you can't tell me it's not an addiction. If you don't know how to calm yourself or relax at the end of the day without your glass of wine or without your bong rip, like, it's an addiction. Like, it's clearly doing something for you. And that is an opportunity for growth, right? That's like an invitation to learn something new about yourself. But I don't know, it's so tricky. And so I think, and especially, I can't even imagine navigating the world today with kids, like you said, where, you know, everything is just like, everyone is walking around with their vape, and, like, you just walk down the street and you even can, like, smoke, like, people smoke weed just, like, on the sidewalk now with their little vape pen, because they're like, and I'm like, I don't even know the law. Like, is this okay? Like, could I get pulled over? Everyone's doing it. So I think it's tricky, because I wonder, does he ever have thoughts of, like, dad, like, I'm doing the things I need to be doing still for the most part. Like, I'm in school or whatever it is. I'm getting good grades or whatever it is. I'm on this sports team or whatever it is. This is clearly not interfering. Like, does he buck back at you saying that it's not interfering? Yeah. And you still know, I wonder if you thinking otherwise is your own stigma around it versus the truth, kind of like me bucking back toward Ryan, because it's been 5 years of him explaining to me, Romana, your thoughts are incorrect, because if you look at my life, I'm not a lazy piece of shit. I am building, and I've managed to do all this while smoking weed every night, you know?
Well, let me answer your specific question first. He has absolutely verbatim said exactly what you said. He has basically told me, Dad, I do 97% of everything right, and he absolutely does. He is on a different level than the kids his age, 100%. And also, let me take it back a little bit too. It's not a stigma that I have, nor is it an issue with marijuana. I do have a specific issue with underage marijuana. And the reason I have a specific issue with that is, as an adult versus a teenager, the effects that it has on development and the brain and just building good and bad habits is far more detrimental than it is as an adult. Also, I've smoked enough in my life. I've drank enough in my life, and I've eaten not in a sense of eating for a purpose versus just eating because that's to enjoy it. It's a big difference when you get older, and the older I've gotten, the more you don't really realize what you're actually doing to your body or doing to your mind or even doing to your schedule until you eliminate it. Once you start eliminating it and you start taking out, whether it be alcohol, whether it be marijuana, you don't really see what the benefits are. And I can tell you that for me personally, it has been a night and day. I would, and I'll even go as far as saying alcohol was always 10 times worse for me the next morning than marijuana. And it's been roughly about 12 months since I haven't had really any alcohol. And it's probably been, you know, I started slowing down my smoking probably about 10 years ago, and it was a slow progression. And I would say I probably haven't really intoxicated myself when it comes to marijuana, at least for a few years. However, it was a slow progression. So there are levels, and there are intoxication. There are times where if you drink a 12-pack versus one beer, they're two different situations, and you're going to get two different results out of that. But I've just learned in the last year of really dialing in on my diet, just living a life of sobriety, that it has absolutely benefited me 100%. But back to my son, I think ultimately my biggest lesson that I'm trying to teach him when it comes to marijuana is to be consistent, and it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's holding yourself accountable to follow certain rules at a young age will only make your life easier when you get older. Whether that's paying your bills on time, whether that's saying that you're going to be at a specific location on time and you're actually there at a specific location on time, it's integrity. Like, people learn that at a young age, and the whole, I would prefer he never smoked marijuana for the rest of his life, but I also realize that that's not going to happen. So what I can do is I can give him options and take things away from him and give him consequences if he does it while underage, in that time frame that I have a little bit of control over. At the end of the day, when he's on his own, he's going to do whatever he wants to do. And then ultimately, I really hope that he kind of looks at me as an example, not necessarily the fact that I'm telling him what to do or I'm telling him he shouldn't do this, but the fact that I'm showing him, because I haven't always been that person that told him what to do as well as showed him what to do. There's been a big majority of his life, I was just telling him what to do and telling him not to do things, and I was doing those things myself.
So you said that he verbatim said, "Dad, I do 97%. Like, let me have this 3%. It's clearly not making me lazy. Like, I'm still showing up." To which your point was to say, okay, but consistency over anything, right? Do you see consistency as 100% of the time? Like, do you find that you live a life where you're 100% consistent 100% of the time?
Absolutely not. But it also, in my latter years, has been more important for me to focus on 100%. When I was younger, I had this pipe dream of wanting to do 100%, but I didn't put in the work. And now I put in the work, and when I, the more that you push and the more that you want 100%, the less that you're going to handle 99%. And so the older I've gotten, and the more that I want to be, not only do I want to grow every day, I want something different every day. It makes me want more and more and more versus the other way around. At the same time, I have to appreciate regulation and appreciate not always being at 100%, and I'm definitely not at 100% all the time, which is awesome because at least I have something to continue to work for. But I just realized that the habits that you create early on ultimately are going to be the habits that you stick to when you're older. And anybody over the age of 30 can understand that creating new habits when you're older is so much more difficult than when you were younger. Having to learn new things and realizing that you were never taught this at a young age is so much more difficult than, you know, relearning things at 30 is far more difficult than having to learn things when you're a teenager.
And then just maintain them. Yeah. So how does your parenting style differ from your parents growing up? Because you mentioned that you haven't necessarily always been this way. You were a little bit different growing up, maybe a little bit more settled. Is that how it was? And I'm just pulling stuff out of my butt.
Actually, it was the opposite. So I've always been, what's the saying? I've always led with an iron fist. Is that a thing? I've always been a very much, you do it my way and this is the way it is. And I've always been like that. And I was raised in that environment. My mother was very much, my mother as well as my Hispanic side of my family are very, very intense when it comes to doing things our way. And I think a lot of the reason I am who I am today is because not only did I learn that that's not what I want to be. You know, a lot of times you take your childhood, you know, what you are taught as a child, and you sometimes you just learn that that's not what you want. That's not what you want to be. And leading with, you know, always forcing it versus the other way around has not been. First off, it hasn't been successful with my son in these last 4 years, 5 years. So I had to do something. He's no longer in a position to be intimidated by spankings or be intimidated by being grounded to his room or having his cell phone taken away. These things don't resonate with him anymore. But it's interesting for me because when I was younger, I always grew up in a very macho environment, and my father is the exact opposite of that. My father is not a macho person. My father is, in my eyes today, the definition of what a real man is. And it's interesting, the older I get, the more I see myself becoming him, and the more that I look at him as an example of what a man is, as far as how to react with things. You know, my father was always kind of a nonviolent individual. He was always a stoic. He was always a, you know, give me options, talk it over. Funny story. I remember one time I had done something incorrect and my dad's job was to discipline me. And typically my mom was the discipliner. I was more intimidated by my mother for my whole life than I was my father. And I remember him coming into the room. And, you know, it was a planned out strategic, you are going to get spanked. I have to spank you at this time, right? So I'm sitting there waiting for him to come in. He looks at me and he's like, are you ready? And I said, okay. He spanks me and he says to me, he's like, don't ever make me do that again. And I always remember that because my father never, ever was that type of individual that was an intimidator, a macho guy, and this. And again, I kind of was raised around that. So the beginning years, you know, between 20 and 30, that's what I thought a man was supposed to do. And then the older I got, the more I started really looking at my father as the example. And I had to kind of transition out of that and versus, you know, not yelling, not raising my voice. And again, by no means am I perfect, but I definitely realize that I have gotten further in communication by not raising my voice, by not yelling, and by just having conversations. And ultimately, you know, my goal is to have better communication, have better conversations, and then hopefully I can at least achieve half of what I'm trying to achieve out of a conversation.
All right, you guys, that concludes part one of the conversation with Will. This part has been more about his experience as a father and the lessons that he's working to teach his son. And part two is going to be a little bit more about his own individual growth journey, the work that it takes to not only become a very good parent, but also the lessons that he is learning through the work in his own romantic relationship and then in his pursuit of becoming a better partner and future husband. So tune in for that episode next week. And other than that, like, share, review. If you have any comments or questions, please send them to me. I love getting them. I love talking about the things you guys ask to hear about. And I will see you next week. Bye.